You're listening to Beyond the Ribbon, a podcast of the Cancer Survivorship Center, powered by 24 Hours in the Canyon. This podcast is brought to you by Auto Inc. Auto Inc. is a distinguished family of dealerships redefining automotive excellence. Be sure to check out their website at autoinc.com. Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ribbon. My name is Ryan Parnell, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and oncology nurse, Pam McMillan.
Hey, Ryan, how are you today?
Pam, I'm doing really good.
Good.
How about you?
I am doing good. You know, we talk about hard topics and maybe some uncomfortable things, but we always want to bring education to our patients.
We started that from the beginning.
Yes, and we want to make sure that we educate them about topics that maybe we have, people have asked us about.
Yep.
And so I think today is one of those topics.
There's no question today is.
Yes.
We've touched on this once before. It's been several years.
Yes.
And a lot has changed.
I believe so.
A lot has changed. Now, listen, you guys following along and listening today, this is going to be a very educational podcast. No stress on our speaker. But I tell you, there's a lot to take in on this. Right, Pam?
Yes.
We learn a lot doing these podcasts. We learn a lot in preparation for these podcasts. And this is no different. I think it's one that we're super excited. And as you said, we'd find someone because I'm not the expert. And I can speak for yourself too, Pam. In this area, you're not the expert.
No.
And so we have someone today that can help us understand and kind of navigate through some of this stuff. So we're super excited to introduce to you guys out there listening. Dr. Andrew Mack is joining us. He's currently a medical oncologist and hematologist at BSA Harrington Cancer Center here in Amarillo and practices state-of-the-art, evidence-based, and compassionate care for all cancers and blood disorders. He completed his hematology and medical oncology fellowship at Roger Williams Medical Center, is part of the Boston University Medical Center in Providence, Rhode Island, and residency in internal medicine at NYU Grossman Long Island School of Medicine in Mineola, New York, where he also served as chief resident and was heavily involved in various quality improvement management and academic activities. He strives to provide the best and most equitable care regardless of personal, financial, familial, or any other circumstance in a cost-effective and cost-conscious and practical manner. Dr. Mack, how are you?
Doing great. Pam, Ryan, thank you for having me here. I'm excited.
Well, I tell you, we're excited to have you because this is one of those topics that we're going to address today with our listeners on the compassionate use of medical marijuana. And I think that you are able to address that because you prescribe for the compassionate medical use of marijuana for your patients. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, sure. We have a program here in the state of Texas that provides low-dose THC products to help with patients for certain conditions. In my case, of course, I am a medical oncologist and hematologist. So my patients that do qualify for this usually have some sort of cancer or blood disorder condition. And so they certainly are eligible.
Yeah.
Why is it important that patients know about this program?
It's important to know because it represents another adjunct, a different tool that they can use in their arsenal to manage through their symptoms, right? Every oncologist or every doctor knows that with a certain disease process, there are symptoms that we have to manage with their disease process. With any sort of cancer care, you have patients that will experience any variety of nausea, vomiting, appetite issues, diarrhea, fatigue, name it.
Yeah.
We have medicines that can help treat all those conditions, but there has been some, use, and of course in this country as the landscape of medical marijuana and recreational marijuana, as that landscape evolves, patients have been utilizing these modalities to treat their conditions.
Their symptoms, yeah. So let's talk at the very basic here. Let's take it back a step and let's talk about what the Texas Compassionate Use Program and how that operates. So for those of you listening, Dr. Mack is not referring to, just a prescription that you take and you just go get filled and have marijuana. That's that, we want to dispel that myth right off the bat. The compassionate use program registers qualified physicians. That's the first thing, right? We want to make sure our listeners understand that. So you go through some application process to be registered within the state of Texas to be able to prescribe.
That is correct. Exactly.
And we're talking about a low dose THC.
Correct.
Which basically means, no more than 1% of THC by weight per the medicine or per the gummy. And then the other thing is that this has to be done through a licensed dispensary, correct?
That's correct. And usually, and then the ones we have right now usually are coming out of Austin, where the state capital is.
So. Yeah, there's three. We did a little research. Pam and I, we perused some of the internet, the websites of the three dispensaries. And yes, they are in the Metroplex areas of Austin and DFW. And then the other thing is that list is where you put a patient, right? You when you prescribe for a patient, you put them on the compassionate use list.
That's exactly right. I mean, there's a completely separate portal that was made specifically for this purpose. We have a dedicated username and password and specific information regarding the medication and demographic information that is entirely separate from a lot of our other databases for that. So it's a completely separate self-functioning autonomous website.
And so that is the person who is allowed to prescribe medical cannabis is someone on that registered list. And in this area, there's not many. You are one.
I am
there's
one.
Not very many.
That is true. In our center, I will say we have four medical oncologists. I'm the only one medical oncologist there. Our radiation oncologist is the other doctor that prescribes it. So we do often overlap in our patients, but sometimes we don't.
True.
And so there are patients that will see him and don't see me for a variety of reasons. And so he certainly can. You know, and this is something that if my patients are on it, my other partners, you know, and this is completely voluntary. They've chosen not to, and I've chosen to. So, there's, you know, if I'm not there and available, you know, they would either be the radiation oncologist or they would have to wait till I come back to refill things.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, Pam, let's talk about this because we've talked about now what it takes to be a prescriber and what that looks like. Let's talk to our listeners about how they qualify.
Yes. How they qualify is they have to meet criteria, right? Can you tell us about those criteria in order for them to meet the compassionate use?
Absolutely. So, you know, the first condition, of course, they have to be a permanent resident of Texas. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Kind of the biggest thing medically that we have to do that patients have to understand or our listeners is that there are only certain conditions that would qualify. Initially, when this system was developed a number of years ago, it started out including conditions where you know, if they have a cancerous condition, ALS, autism, epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, PTSD and spasticity. And I think where this list originally comes from is because in the literature, there are a number of conditions where cannabis or medical marijuana-based products have been shown to show some efficacy with that. And we're going to come back to kind of all that discussion in a little bit. That list has recently grown with some recent passage and every time more conditions need to be added, that would, of course, have to go through the state legislature and Senate and signed off by the governor. And then, of course, the main thing, of course, is that the best person to really prescribe that is a physician that practices that specialty with that condition as part of their main practice.
Right. So you're not prescribing this for epileptic patients.
Absolutely.
Or ALS
not.
Patients.
Absolutely
you're,
not.
You're taking care of your cancer patients.
That's exactly right. And I think I want to have a little disclaimer too, with the oncologists too, depending on which oncologist you talk to, medical oncologists, we are also hematologists at the same time, right? So there is an overlap between, you know, what we do for solid cancers, liquid cancers, but we also take care of a number of patients that are being seen for things like anemia and white blood cell issues and this. And just because I am an oncologist does not mean that all of my patients will qualify either within my practice. So it's a very narrow, I'm not narrow, but it's a very specific group of patients.
True. Yeah. And obviously this is heavily regulated.
Absolutely.
Heavily regulated.
Correct.
The other thing is that's very interesting about this is, so you may be saying, but I don't see Dr. Mack. I see someone else. Well, Dr. Mack cannot prescribe medical cannabis for you, can you?
No, I cannot.
Yeah.
You would have to first, number one, of course, establish a, you know, care with me, right? If you're followed by a medical oncologist, you can certainly follow with them. What I would have you do is, you know, they can potentially, you know, seek a second opinion, so to speak, with me and establish their care with me, and we will work together on this. But unless I physically look at you, you establish we have that patient-physician relationship, that would be the only way to do that. If this is not only for legal grounds, but for my moral and ethical reasons as well, too. It would not be in good practice, and potentially could get all of us in trouble if I were to do this without physically seeing you and establishing that relationship with you.
So how does a patient come about and say, okay, I want to talk to you about medical cannabis?
Yep. So a number of different directions. A number of the times it's brought up by family members or the patient themselves. A lot of our patients are typically older. And of course, sometimes there are feelings about these substances that linger around that they don't ask about these things. What I find is really, especially a lot of the younger family members, children or children or other distant family members that ask, especially on the younger ones, because part of this whole argument, part of this whole process, we have to acknowledge that there has been some societal and generational shifts with how we understand how medical cannabis or the greater use of recreational substances have been used in medical care. So other times I do mention that, hey, we have this other option that we have. I prescribe it because, of course, I do. The reason why I bring it up too is that the reality is that we do live in a more or less tri-state or quadruple state area where we do have neighboring states that do something similar, if not. I think the great thing for me, I think just personally, I've more or less grown up always in a tri-state area. And it's really interesting to see how different states enact different laws, but without considering what the surrounding states are. So really, it's really relevant for us being so close, especially to New Mexico and Oklahoma, that we understand what the legal landscape and what is possible in our area.
You remember, Pam, in the very first one of these that we did, it was a nurse practitioner from California, and she made the comment and said, our patients are already doing this.
Correct.
Do you feel that way as well?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, absolutely. I mean, some choose to voluntarily disclose it. Some don't, but I know it's happening. Just because, again, we're only 2 hours away from the New Mexico state line. That's the biggest one where, as far as my understanding is, recreational marijuana in certain quantities is legal in New Mexico. And that's the way that they've chosen. Is that correct?
Yes.
So why should someone talk to you as opposed to going to go get some in New Mexico or Colorado?
Yep. Especially if you're a Texas state resident, and especially if you're seeking care for cancer under my purview, whether it's, and I'm very honest with my patients, this is a judgment-free zone. I'd rather know everything that you're taking, illegal, recreational, illicit, whatever you want to call it, because I need to know, number one, what you're taking. Is it going to interact with some of the medicines we give you, right? Yeah. Some of the medicines, chemotherapy, immunotherapy, are toxins in their own right as well. I have to acknowledge that. They may actually be more dangerous than some of the medicines that you'll be hearing that you've heard about today. And so we need to know, number one, whether there's going to be an interaction, okay? Number two, it's kind of, I do that because also, we will also want to be mindful of, like, if there's a way that we can provide this to you in a legal way, especially in the state of Texas, then we can do that, right? We certainly don't want to bankrupt our patients. So if you're spending all this money out of pocket for this, we want to make sure if there's a way we can do it legally, that would be good. The other issue, of course, and probably one of the most fundamental issues and important issues is that whatever is purchased out of state, just because you purchased it legally in another state, let's say Colorado, New Mexico, does not mean that it's going to be illegal here. Right. I've had multiple talks with law enforcement and other people who are involved in that, is that, whatever you ultimately bring back in the state, if you are found about it, there are some legal implications there, which I can get into if you guys want me to go into that.
That's the perfect segue into, as you said, why they should do it through the compassionate use program is because it is legal.
Correct.
And now you have the Texas compassionate use, certification, you're in the system, and even still going to New Mexico or Colorado, coming back, that's still illegal bringing that through.
Correct.
Because it is prescribed. It's like having a prescription, but it's for medical cannabis.
Correct. And exactly. So, you know, and how we do it too, when you get the actual substance, the CBD, THC product, you will get, you know, the actual bottle with like our label and the, that you were part of this program. You know, we don't have a physical script, much like we don't have physical scripts for pain medicines anymore for a very good reason. And so that covers you, especially if you have the product legally prescribed through the compassionate use program. It is legal, so you cannot, you will not be penalized or whatnot. But certainly, it's very sad and unfortunate if, let's say, a cancer patient currently undergoing care or their family member is stopped on the way coming back into Texas and they have to get fines or perhaps even jailed. But the reality is that that is the law here. We have to follow by the law, and it's very unfortunate, but the law is the law, you know, at the right end of the day.
And so one thing I think is important to bring up that we didn't talk about when we say through the compassionate use program, let's talk about what it actually is.
Okay.
The products that they get, yep. Right? It's not what you think of as smoking marijuana. That's yep. not it at all. Let's talk about yep. what it is through the compassion.
Absolutely.
Use.
So, you know, the great thing about the suppliers for the compassionate use program is that they supply various products that has low grade THC in it, in various forms. Things like gummies, tinctures, which are little, you know, concentrated forms of liquid with that has THC in it. There's certainly, I think, brownies or candy bars, or a lot of it actually, I think is, or lozenges, excuse me, a lot of substances that you can ingest, right? And there is data and of course, people's personal experience about how marijuana, when it's ingested and smoked, there are different effects on it. But the reason why we have it in more of an oral form is that you can concentrate it and refine the dosing and really get it to precise dosing. Whereas if you smoke it, there are ways to, you know, pretty much, you know, standardize the dosing, but when you synthesize it into like an oral way, it does, they're able to standardize the dosing a little bit more appropriately. I typically prescribe things in gummies just because, well, I'm a fan of just the gummy, you know, concept in general. I like the, you know, just gummy bears when I was a kid, but I think it makes it really easy for the patients because you don't have to swallow it. You chew it. It's a nice flavor. You know, and for our patients with nausea, vomiting, low appetite, that provides a great option too. Tinctures are quite good too, but sometimes getting the dosing is a little confusing. So really I think like little things like lozenges and other kind of ways, it provides a nice form, easy way of dispensing.
Yeah. That's kind of what I thought, Pam, when we were looking at the website. And well, that makes perfect sense to just, you know, if it's prescribed this way as one gummy every so often, you know, whatever hour, correct, however many hours, it's kind of like, you know, taking your pain medicine in a case like that. So it's not like eat half a chocolate bar or something like that, or 12 drops of the tincture or whatever that is. You know, it's going to be very specific for that.
Yep. Exactly.
So for our listeners, they're probably going, okay, so there's gummies, there's tinctures, but I also hear about CBD, and then there's THC, and then that my prescriber might have given me Marinol. Like, what is the difference?
Yes, that's a very, I'm glad we're talking about that, because that is a fundamental difference that we have to understand within the products, right? So in the state of Texas, you know, we have to understand the laws around this, right? We are able to provide, prescribe legal low THC products in the state of Texas for certain indications medically. The difference between THC and CBD comes with I like to distill it down to just predominantly two differences. THC stands for tetrahydrocannabinol. It's found in predominantly in the marijuana plant, cannabis. Sativa is actually the genus and species of what's commonly used. CBD stands for cannabidiol. That is a separate but similar group of receptors within the actual chemical compound. CBD products are predominantly derived from the hemp plant, H-E-M-P. Hemp, people may know, it's made to use like, you know, thick rope. So the fundamental difference too, so that's one difference. The second difference is that while the effects to help with nausea, vomiting, fatigue are relatively similar, the main difference is that the psychoactive effects what do I mean by that? The high, so to speak. When people smoke the marijuana, that's THC. That high, that feeling of elation and things like that, that is more pronounced with the THC products. And that is why, particularly in our state, that is why it's the high doses are illegal. CBD doesn't have that. And that's why you'll find that in the state of Texas, different dispensaries, we have many CBD products, rolls, you know, on your skin and, you know, that you can apply. You know, different gummies, things like with CBD, that part, that is all legal because that doesn't have the psychoactive THC in it. So that is a whole different thing. A lot of states have really legalized that. There's no confusion about that. So I tell patients, you know, if they're not willing to, you know, or unable to meet the cost of the THC products through the compassionate use program, there is other options where they can get the CBD products, which are, again, hemp-based, not psychoactive. That can be effective in alleviating their symptoms. It's just it doesn't have that psychoactive side effects, the high, so to speak.
And is the products... I don't know what I'm trying to think, like by FDA, are they regulated?
Okay. So, so in this, in the United States, there has been a loophole, I'll say in the loophole in the US where anything that is vitamins, supplements, anything that's predominantly plant-based, like in this way, is exempt from FDA approved. So none of this is FDA approved. Usually a lot of those, when you read on the vitamin and supplement bottles, you see that, these statements are not evaluated by the FDA. And then there's a larger story to that, which we can go into once we talk about more, but yeah, none of this is FDA approved. You brought up Marinol. Marinol, I want to bring that up. Marinol is a it's a synthetic derivative of the THC chemical, I will say, that was developed maybe 20, 30 years ago, kind of came onto the market about 20 years ago, really has not found great usage, I think, because the studies that looked at Marinol in comparison to other existing medicines to help with certain symptoms, it really didn't show that much promise. Because, and I think part of it too is that, yes, you think medicines that are supposed to mimic certain active drugs, that one didn't pan out for some reason. And actually, I've tried prescribing it too. Again, it's a controlled substance. That has been very difficult to prescribe because just a lot of pharmacies don't have it, just because it's not really, not many people use it. They're scared to use it. Doctors are scared to use that and whatnot. So really, it has, because that has really kind of fallen off. And especially in the cancer literature, that really has fallen off in terms of favorability, honestly.
And it is expensive too.
And it's expensive. And but first of all, you got to find a pharmacy that's
that has it.
Yeah, a week ago, I tried doing it for a patient, didn't stock it. I'm like, let's just look at other things, honestly.
Yeah. You know, that Pam, that brings up a very good point too, is that, you know, none of this compassionate use, you know, medical cannabis is covered on insurance.
That's great. That's
it can be expensive.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something that, you know, obviously as a patient, they need to have that discussion with you, is how good are the benefits? Is it worth this, you know, product? Is it worth me doing this? And I think, you know, I know you have those conversations. How does that go? You know, I know it's individual per person, but
correct.
The benefit, is it there? Is it worth trying if this is something that they're struggling with?
Okay. So that's it's a really great question. One of the big topics that we talk about in the modern oncology world and in conferences is that, you know, we talk about financial toxicity, right? The treatments that we give for cancer can be physically toxic. And there's the mental part about coping as well too. But I think what doesn't get enough attention is the financial toxicity. We are not in the business to bankrupt people, but unfortunately a lot of these drugs, the legal chemotherapy, immunotherapy, are very, very expensive. And that is the fundamental problem with accessing this, I think, in our population too, because the reality of it is that one of the main barriers I've encountered is not the actual process of prescribing it. That part is relatively simple, straightforward. It's how we're going to pay for this and how are we going to do that. And you see, of course, as Ryan, you mentioned, you know, it's so expensive that it really kind of, the patients that can afford it really are the only ones that are benefiting. So then you get into the larger question of, is this equitable, right? What about those patients that, that can't afford it, but perfectly, you know, they're perfectly able, they qualify for it, but it's just out of their reach. So you reach into larger questions of health equity and whatnot. And that's been a fundamental problem and challenge in my view, with prescribing it in this way in the state of Texas. We are the second most populated state. There's a huge population of patients that will get sick from cancer and or these other conditions that would potentially benefit from it. But unfortunately, with the way that currently is prescribed, you know, we are limited by that. And it is very cost prohibitive for some people.
Yeah. So. And the trick on this too is, just for you guys listening, is there's three dispensaries licensed by the state of Texas to provide compassionate use medical marijuana. And we talked about that, where they're located, and they won't ship it. It has to be delivered, and so inquire about if they come to Amarillo, mm-hmm. Or to your area where the closest is. Some of them have drop-off locations, but I think it's important to just recognize and do all your homework before you make this jump into that, because you don't want to waste your money or your time.
And one other, I want to add something to it. Not only do they deliver to you, but someone needs to be physically home to sign for it. And especially that person needs to be listed under the registry, because a lot of times I've had to get, they will not just drop out. It's not Amazon or FedEx where anybody can sign. It has to be, if the patient's not home, a particular person, whether it's the spouse, very the child, that has to be listed in the registry with a certain demographic information. So that is ironclad right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about the older population that have this concept about drugs. And, you know, if you start this medication, you're going to get addicted to it. Is that true about this medication?
No.
Or the THC?
No, absolutely not. I mean, again, we need more research with medical marijuana or marijuana in general. There's larger issues to that, policy issues that we can kind of discuss later or now. But this idea of addiction to marijuana or it being the gateway drug, I mean, the research hasn't really panned out for that, right? If we want to talk about addiction, let's talk about things that can cause addiction. Pain medications, things that we legally prescribe for pain, alcohol. What I think people get quote unquote addicted onto is not so much the drug itself, it's the feeling, right? Mm-hmm. The feeling, certainly I'm sure all of us know people who use marijuana on a regular basis, whether it's recreationally or not, and especially in jurisdictions where, in states where it is legal, right? Patients get hooked on it, the behavior, and also the benefit that they get from a behavioral psychologic standpoint. But in terms of the actual biochemical biochemical effect, hasn't panned out in that way. You know, every now and then there's people that may suggest it, but you have to also look at the motives behind who's writing it, right? Because some people would love to say, oh, marijuana is, or cannabis is addictive, you should not do that. But you have to also look at, you can't have this conversation and look at that without also looking at the background, the history behind it, especially with our older patients, mm-hmm. with the war on drugs and everything that started with Reagan. That's very relevant as well.
Right.
So,
and I think too, it goes back to the risk versus benefit.
Correct.
And I know that's the conversation you have.
Yeah.
Is it, what are the benefits for you? And I think that's, you know, huge, huge opportunity to make a difference in someone's life that's struggling with their side effects from cancer treatment.
Absolutely. And I phrase it this way. I mean, if it remains an option for you and you're able to do it and you're able to safely procure it and, you know, sign for it and then pay for it on a regular basis, I did say to patients like this, we know from anecdotal and observational studies that there is some potential benefit to help with nausea, to help with vomiting, with fatigue, you get energy, appetite, pain. That's just the beginning of the iceberg, right? As an oncologist, we have medications for all of those side effects. So imagine you're taking at minimum three or four side effects, three or four pills, and you can address it with this low dose THC or in other states where it is, you know, everything else is legal. You get to essentially manage all these symptoms with one substance versus four or five, right? Mm-hmm. I always tell patients, you know, yes, we can provide all these anti-nausea medications, drugs, things like that, but they have their own set of side effects as well, too. They're not all, you can't really take them all willy-nilly, too. There are patients that, you know, need to double up very frequently on these nausea vomiting medications. They're not without side effects either. Mm-hmm. So if you can, you know, I'm all for being efficient. I'm all for being, getting the most bang for your buck. And especially if we can accomplish that, in an ideal world, if money's not an issue and you can accomplish taking one substance or compound versus four or five, of course, it's a lot, quite logical in that way.
Well, and there's considerable less interactions with everything else that's being prescribed.
Absolutely.
If you're able to, trim off three or four other pills.
Absolutely. It decreases what we call the pill burden in modern medicine, right? Cancer patients are notorious to having this high pill burden, right? Especially if they're elderly. And we have a problem with polypharmacy in this country, about where we prescribe eight medicines or more. With cancer, there's inflammation going on. They can't swallow, they're nauseous, they're vomiting. So really to decrease face all that pill burden is very important, very key as well. This is very nuanced, and especially our nursing colleagues are particularly good at, you know, teasing these things out, and they know this firsthand as well. Just because I can prescribe something doesn't mean that it's going to be effective or it's going to be you're going to take it the way that you're supposed to. And it's a lot when you have at one time, unfortunately. So.
And for our listeners, let's just remind them, whatever they decide to take, they need to make sure they talk to their healthcare provider about every medication, every vitamin, everything.
Over the counter.
Honesty is key. I'll give an example. I think it's very important. This is not really medical marijuana, but I had a patient that took this vitamin that supposedly was supposed to help with maybe some cancer-killing effect of liver cancer. We found out that actually this substance, after doing some more research, actually could potentially lead to liver toxicity in its own right when he had liver cancer already. So I'm like, we told the patient, we were seeing in real time the liver enzymes were going up while we're treating it with what we're treating. So we would like an ideal, I hope that all oncologists, all doctors can approach this in a very judgment-free manner. Yes, we have our own biases and prejudices just like anybody else, but I think really leave it at the door and just really create an open and honest environment, because honestly, prevention of future problems is always better than trying to chase afterwards.
Yeah.
We don't want our patients to suffer with all these side effects.
Absolutely.
And they can get
especially help. While you're trying to treat side effects, right, to have more side effects.
It's what has been disappointing sometimes, or like I kind of, not admonish is a strong word, but I would kind of, you know, kind of hit them lightly with my piece of paper. I was just like, when they get side effects and when they take certain things thinking that's going to be right, or they read something on Facebook or YouTube or whatever on social media, and they take it without telling us. And certainly we don't know everything either about these, you know, about everything, but we can at least work and do our best to look into the literature and see, you know, are there interactions? Because yes, unfortunately I've had patients, we're a very independent minded group here in the state, especially in this region of Texas. So patients will do what feels right for them. And I have to acknowledge the fact that no matter how skillful or experienced or educated I am, that one family member or friend that's taken one thing that's helped them, whatever, it can be more powerful than whatever I can do. It doesn't matter that I went to medical school and resident, however many years of training. I have to acknowledge that. And so that's something that we have to acknowledge. You acknowledge that, you show them your perspective, tell them, you know, show them that you care, and show them, and then say, hey, you know, I don't think this would be right for you. Let's revisit this at another time. Let's continue. I'm prescribing something I know that works for you, and let's work together on this, and maybe just hold off on that medication. Right. You know, happens more often than not these days.
Thanks to probably Google.
Oh my God, Dr. Google, my nemesis.
Yes,
my nemesis.
Yeah, you know, we cannot stress enough. Do your research,
correct,
but do it in a safe and correct way.
Correct.
You know, and find reputable sources. And I would say, Pam, one of the most eye-opening podcasts we did was with the librarian from the University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center, and she gave a lot of tips on how to find and recognize reputable sources. So that's a good one to go back to. It's been about a year or two ago. Go back and listen to that. There's a lot of good tips on how to make sure and know that what you're doing and looking at is a reputable source, because you if you want to find that lemon juice cures cancer, you'll find it.
You'll find it.
That's what it's like out there.
And I think that is actually a natural segue into actually my next comment. I wanted to make sure we address this point too, and to kind of educate our listeners about this, is that that part is actually very important, especially with the way that the landscape with medical marijuana is evolving, is that, you know, when you look at information, it's not just some little thing on TikTok or these sound bites. When the shorter it is, or the more, you know, headlines it is, that I get worried about that. What we really need is that if you want to educate yourself, you know, you look at what we call in the statistics or oncology world or medical world, is you want to look at studies that look at different medications from a random, that has been subjected to the gold standard of research, which is what we call randomized control trials, right? Where they control all the situations and really, really tightly with large groups of patients and whatnot. I get comments about, oh, well, this medication, someone said this works or that works anecdotally. This is all anecdotal, right? And part of the problem, of course, what we have with the ongoing landscape with medical marijuana is that for a long time we have not been able to study it in the way that, you know, other pharmacotherapeutics have been. And so that remains a challenge that is ongoing. It's finally kind of being freed now. And in the next 10 to 20 years, I hope to see some more positive developments. But we really have to, that's the key word, randomized controlled clinical trials, not, oh, five patients, it worked for five patients. Oh, just because it worked for my grandmother, someone's uncle's son, doesn't mean it's going to work on you. And actually, it can be very dangerous because some of these other non-regulated substances can be of certain dosing that we don't know. So that's the key thing. So the more soundbite is, the more that it sounds too good to be true, probably too good to be true.
Yeah. And just because it's on TikTok doesn't mean it's right.
Don't get me started.
Dr. Mack, is there anything else that we have missed about the compassionate use, THC, CBD, that you would like to address?
No, I think we covered a lot of things. And I think both of you know this to me. There's the knowledge, there's the literature side, but I'm a very practical person. I like to distill everything down. I would just say a couple of things that whatever we say now in 2025 will continue to change. Yeah. There's a move to reclassify marijuana into a different schedule. And that hopefully that, what that means is that, different quote unquote, dangerous substances like opioids and all these kind of things are scheduled according to this, to the FDA and CDC guidelines. And there's a move to potentially move medical marijuana into a lower category so that it can be studied more effectively. And that landscape will continue to improve over the next 10, 20, 30 years. The laws will continue to evolve as well too. I agree with Pam, Ryan, and y'all both talked about it, about doing a research, making sure about not just the medical efficacy, but then also the legal landscape. We currently have a patchwork of laws right now that don't make any sense right now. I mean, we're one country, but 50 different state governments so really be very mindful of what you can and can do in certain jurisdictions, because the last thing we want our patients to do is to get in problems with the law when the thing they should be caring about is getting better and whatnot. Yeah. But unfortunately, that is a reality right now that we're living in.
Yeah. Yes. I feel for those that are trying to feel better, and do good. And yet maybe they feel like, well, it's just 2 hours away. I'll just go over there. And, they get in trouble. And we do not want that. And yeah. I think that's important to reiterate, is to do this safely, do it controlled, and do it the right way, which is through the Texas Compassionate Use Program.
Yep. I hope one day that, we have more options to our patients. And everything I'm saying from, again, this is from my personal and professional experience, right? This is all anecdotal, but the patients who have used either low-dose THC or, other ways that I don't know about, patients have derived benefit from it. Whether it is going to be the right thing for you, have a great talk with your doctor, your provider, nurse practitioner, PA, whoever, about this, but get multiple opinions, right? Get multiple opinions about how this is, explore these different options. There's going to be someone that knows how to do, get through this and details about this. And that's why we're here today to talk about that. But see if it's the right thing for you. And then there are different options. It may or may not be, but if you do it the right way in this, I'm always a fan. Hey, if you're wanting to look to decrease your pill burden, you're looking for other ways to help things that are to reduce interactions and maybe a little bit more natural. There are ways we can do this. Yep. You can always try it. And then if you don't like it, you just stop. Yeah.
No harm, no foul.
No harm, no foul.
Doesn't mean it's right for everybody.
That's exactly right. Sure.
That's often what we say here. Not every class is for everybody, but at least try it and maybe it will be beneficial to you.
Right.
So
that's right.
Dr. Mack, that brings us to our last segment. It is sponsored by the Auto Inc. family. Do you have an Auto Inc. inspiring moment that you can share with our listeners?
It related to our topic or just...
Yes.
I think... kind of already touched upon, and nothing, not quite specific, but I have seen kind of the power of these products when used correctly. They have brought great relief to patients and whatnot, and it's not something I can describe. It's very hard. I'm imagining it right now, actually in front of me. I'm seeing the patients. When you see, not even what they're saying, you can see it on their face that where, 3 weeks ago, you see them suffering so much when they start these products, and then it works for them and it works really well, and you see the elation and just the comfort and peace on their face. This is something I know providers, doctors, when you work with patient care and you can see that in front of you kind of in real time, that they don't even have to say it. I know they're deriving benefit from what we're helping them to do. That has been just rewarding in that respect. Just seeing it on their face, they don't even have to say anything. I know that things are better for them and it's working, and we're truly helping them get over their symptoms, help them through this journey. So,
You know, you're not there to hurt them, but to help them. And Absolutely. So as long as you're talking to your healthcare provider, that's the most important thing. Your treatment will be much better.
Absolutely.
There's a lot here, Pam, to digest. There's a lot to take. I mean, we touched on so many things that we continually talk about. Communication and honesty with your provider. I think that's a key point to reiterate. Be open and honest. Ask those questions and do your research. Advocate for yourself. You know, if you are struggling with some of those symptoms, as Dr. Max said, whether it's appetite, nausea, vomiting, sleeplessness, all those things, anxiety, fear of recurrence, all those things I know that many of our folks suffer with, it's good to ask questions.
Absolutely.
I think that's the key. Do your research. Do your research. Look into this. Pam, I know I learned a lot.
I did too. Thank you, Dr. Mack, for being here.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
No, of course. I'm happy to be here and I'm hoping to return at some point and then we can continue building on this. I'm really excited to be a part of this.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. You know, I think it's important to reiterate too that the providers that take that extra step to provide this legally, I think because not everyone does and not everyone has been a part of that. So I know your patients that you have helped are super appreciative that you did the time and effort and energy to put forth to be on the compassionate use program. So thank you again from them. Listen, you guys listening, this is a great episode to share with your friends that are cancer survivors, share with your loved ones, those that you know have gone through cancer. We always want folks to share that information. You know, we talked about the expense of things, and I we got to bring this up, Pam, because we talk about this every podcast. We talk about the expense of the treatment and so forth. But what does it cost for them to come to this Cancer Survivorship Center?
Just a little bit of their time.
Just a little bit of time.
And, you know, you can get benefit from that little time that you get here with some of our classes, everything from exercise classes to, you know, massage therapy if you're stressed. There's a lot of things that they can take part in.
That's right. Counseling. Dietary counseling, emotional counseling, all those things we are able to provide for you free of charge. Many of those, too, we're able to do via virtual. And we also have Spanish speaking. So that's another thing to bring up as well.
Right.
All very simple and easy. You guys, thank you for joining us on this episode. Well, again, we want to thank Dr. Mack for joining us and sharing his expertise. And Pam, I just love learning from our podcasts.
Yes. We don't know what's going to be next.
That's right. That brings up a good question. If you have a topic you want us to cover on our podcast, shoot us an email. Call us 806-331-2400. Give us a call or send us an email at info@24survivorship.org. Let us know what's on your mind. Let us know some things that you'd love for us to talk about. And then make sure you join us next time for another great episode of Beyond the Ribbon.
Thanks again for listening to Beyond the Ribbon. We'd like to extend a special thanks to the Auto Inc. family of dealerships as they have supported the 24 Hours in the Canyon Cancer Survivorship Center since 2016. For more information on the Cancer Survivorship Center, please visit our website at 24survivorship.org.